There's men and women all around who fought and died for your freedom. And it's real fucked up how the government treats them. They just sit back and they won't even feed them. They lay on the ground feeling defeated. Lord, they paid their dues and they beat the enemy while they're all alone fighting PTSD. Cause freedom ain't free, but in reality, you entitled assholes are handed everything. We should all rise up and all just agree that division ain't the way that it's supposed to be. Lord, it's a damn shame what the world's gotten to. We the people like you and we the people like me should just wake up and realize it's true. Cause it is, oh it is, living in the new world with an old soul.
Heavenly Father, thank you for beautiful days. Thank you for springtime, and just thank you for renewal. It is a gorgeous day out there, and it is renewing for our souls, and it shows us that there's always growth. And as we always say on the show, there's always light after the darkness. So, Father, thank you for the reminder today, and I just pray that everybody is safe and that you keep your arms wrapped around them. I pray this all in the name of Jesus Christ, your Son, my Lord and Savior. Amen. Hello and welcome to the Veteran Show. It's Saturday, April 20th, 2024. I am Laura and I'm sitting here with my awesome husband, Jeff. Hi, baby.
Hello, everyone.
You feeling better? He's had a rough day.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm sorry, baby. You're such a trooper. I love you for what you put up with me. And we're here with producer Michelle. As always, thank you, producer Michelle. You're just awesome sauce. And WCBM for the opportunity to bring a voice to the voiceless to our fellow veterans. We really appreciate the opportunity. The purpose of the Veteran Show is just two fellow veterans talking to other veterans, and our goal is just to prevent veteran suicide. That's what we want to do. People say that there's 22 veteran suicides a day. We don't believe that number is correct, but frankly, the number doesn't even matter because one suicide is one too many, and we want to prevent that one or that 22, and we think that the very first way that you start by preventing suicide is by just by having a conversation and saying, how are you doing? Are you okay? And do you need to talk? And if you do need anything, let me help you. I will find a way to help you. And there's lots of charities out there. So that's the purpose of the Veterans Show. So we thank you for joining us tonight. It means a lot to us. You could be doing anything else. I do want to give out the crisis line. If you are in crisis, if you are in a dark spot, we do understand that, but there is light. So you just dial 988 and then option one, or you can text 838-255, or you can chat at www.veteranscrisisline.net. There's so many ways to reach out. Heroes Bridge has a Battle Buddy National Call-In Center. That number is 1-800-653-8387. Again, that's 800-653-8387. Heroes Bridge is going to help you with anything that you need. They're going to try to find a way, so just call them. You can always go to AA if you're dealing with substance abuse. There's meetings 24/7 online, and my personal suggestion is God. If you're in a dark place, just turn to God. He will never, never ever leave you. He will answer you. I know for a fact he will, so reach out to him. If I'm talking fast, that's because I'm meaning to. We have a very packed show tonight. I'm not going to go into a whole spiel of everything. We have two guests tonight. Our first guest we're taking right now, his name is, he is retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Edwin Kennedy, and he is representing Defend Arlington. There's some pretty gnarly things happening to our beautiful and beloved Arlington National Cemetery, and I think people need to hear about it. Some things are coming down the pike, so we needed to get him on the show tonight. We're going to bring him back on another show on May 18th, but tonight he's going to tell you a little bit about what he's been doing. So with that, Lieutenant Colonel Kennedy, thank you for being on the line with us. I'm going to tell you to, if you can introduce yourself to the audience, and the floor is yours, sir. Tell us what's happening in Arlington.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm a retired Army officer. I spent 29 years in uniform. I come from an Army family. My kids served in the military. I have one boy that was an Army officer, served in Iraq, another one that was in the Navy as a sailor. And I'm very proud of my military service, but I'm not proud of what's going on with the military today. And one specific thing can be found at our website, defendarlington.org, for all the details. But the Army, under the auspices of the Naming Commission, recently took down the beautiful Reconciliation Memorial that was dedicated by President Wilson in 1915. And we're trying to get the Army to put it back because we feel like they broke the law and went outside the remit which Congress gave the Naming Commission.
Can you explain this all in a little bit more? Can you just dumb it down for people like me a little bit more?
I have to dumb it down for myself.
I'm not a smart man, Jenny. Sorry.
Well, the Arlington Memorial was emplaced in 1915. It had been, the genesis was the last president to have served in the war between the states. President McKinley said because of the service of the Southerners during the Spanish-American War, we needed to reconcile. He said the best way to do this is have a beautiful memorial emplaced in the cemetery. He started the first of four official congressional acts to reconcile with the South. 1901, 1906, 1928, 1958, Congress passed acts to recognize Confederate soldiers as American veterans, not U.S., but American veterans. And there's a difference. But what they did is they commissioned the building of a beautiful memorial in Arlington, and under the acts, buried Confederate soldiers inside Arlington Cemetery as part of the reconciliation.
So
all these years...
Okay, go ahead. Sorry. My bad. Go ahead.
After all these years, as a result of the George Floyd death, and he died now, we know, as a result of drug overdose, Elizabeth Warren, the woman who says she's an Indian descendant, but we found out she's not, said that she wants all traces of the Confederacy removed from federal property. Well, Arlington Cemetery is federal property. However, the law that was passed did not say they could take away headstones or memorials in cemeteries. So the Army, under the auspices of the Naming Commission, went after the memorial. And we know why, because the retired Army officer, Ty Sigel, who sat on the Naming Commission, personally was offended by that memorial. He said so in his book that he wrote about this. And he wanted to target that memorial for destruction. So in December, the Army removed that beautiful memorial that has been there for over 100 years, not offending anybody, but reflecting our history and memorializing the soldiers who died in combat. It's not a memorial to the Confederacy. It's a memorial to the dead soldiers who died in combat. It wasn't about race, but that's what they made it into, which is a false premise. If you buy into that argument, then all the U.S. Army memorials to 1948 should be removed also because the Army was segregated. That's racism, and that's the argument they were using to do this.
Well, let's not give them any ideas. I'm sure they're going after those next. Just give them time.
Yeah.
So reconciliation kind of means coming to terms. We're making peace between each other. So they wanted to take down a monument that represented a horrible crack throughout the nation. And they were trying to sew the wound shut with this monument. And now people want to tear down the monument because it offends them. But did they ask anybody else if it was offensive to them? Because if we're going to live in a land that we just tear everything down that offends us, we're going to be living in a barren wasteland where there's not going to be anything.
No, they did not ask others. Under the remit, they were under the congressional remit, they were supposed to consult with groups like ours, historical groups. They refused to do it. They wouldn't hear about it. Arlington National Cemetery has a commission that deals with this stuff, they didn't even consult with them, which really is amazing. These are retired distinguished American military personnel that make up this commission in Arlington Cemetery. They were supposed to consult with them as well and refused to do it. So they went ahead and executed without properly getting input. They didn't want to hear from us because they knew what they would hear. So part of the problem we have is they broke the law and they ethically violated the trust that was given to them by Congress.
Well, people
don't know about it.
Go ahead. I'm great at interrupting.
That's all right. I was hoping to let you get some air in there. I travel around the states. I am amazed at people not knowing about what happened. And they've successfully covered this up in the press. They don't want people to know. So we filed suit. Judge Reggie Alston, who's in the district, violated ethics by going up there with the Army to look at the memorial. They invited him to come after they cleaned the site up, got all the heavy equipment off the grave. And so he violated judicial ethics by doing that. He refused to take our representative up there.
So give out the website one more time so people listening can please immediately help, either by making phone calls or any way possible. How can they get a hold
of you? Phone calls, and we need to pay for our legal representation. It's defendarlington.org. Defendarlington.org.
Well, I appreciate everything that you're doing, Colonel Kennedy, and I do look forward to talking to you more on the 18th of May. Thank you for fighting for our beautiful Arlington, and keep doing it. Everybody, what the judge is really, and what they're all trying to say is that they're not desecrating Arlington. Now, I don't know how that's quite possible, because the second you walk into Arlington, you're not even really supposed to speak. You're supposed to be quiet. So please tell me the bulldozer that took the statue or the monument out, was that quiet? Did that
Absolutely
represent?
Not.
Well, I didn't think so either. And so that right there, you desecrated Arlington. Immediately, you desecrated them, and you didn't think twice about it. And you need to fix your mistake, because you're starting to piss off some veterans. I appreciate everything that you do, Colonel Kennedy. Keep up fighting, and I hope everybody goes and visits the Defend Arlington website. I'll talk to you again on the 18th of May, and God bless you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you. Everybody else, we have to take a commercial break. Hang in there. We'll be right back.
Have you ever heard a love song that set your spirit free? Have you ever watched a sunrise and felt you could not breathe? What if it's him? What if it's God speaking?
Welcome back, everybody, and thank you for listening to The Veteran Show with Jeff and Laura. If you're in crisis, please pick up the phone, dial 988, press option 1, or text 838-255. Just remember, you're never alone. There's always somebody out there that loves you and wants to hear your voice.
Absolutely, and I thank you for giving that out, baby. I really appreciate it. Tonight we have a really special guest. I'm super excited. It's a first for The Veteran Show, political candidate, but before I bring him in, it was almost like perfect timing today, the news articles that came out, because it fits in perfectly for our guest. Our guest is actually retired Army Major Donald E. Scoggins, and he is a Republican, and he's running for to be mayor of Baltimore City. And what's interesting is today, right before I bring him on, I just wanted to read this article It says Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott announced Friday that he was diverting COVID funds to support non-white artists in the city. And then the next article below it is former Baltimore Mayor Sheila Dixon, who was convicted of embezzlement, is running for mayor again. So that's nice. So I just thought Major Scoggins, he reached out to us, and I thought it would be good to bring him on because Baltimore, he needs some options. I'm worried about you, Baltimore. And so if you want to find out some news or more about Major Scoggins, you can go to www.scogginsformayor.com. Again, that's www.scogginsformayor.com. And I will spell that. So it's www.scogginsformayor.com. Scoggins for Mayor. But I wanted, so Major Scoggins, can you hear me okay? Do I have you on the line?
Yeah, I can hear you very well, and thanks for inviting me on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate talking to you. You gave me a lot of your time, and that is pretty awesome of you, and you were willing to have open and truly honest conversation. And so I think both of us, you and me, are hoping to, I know we're going to continue that tonight. So first, if you can, you have quite a bio, and if I read all of it, I'm going to take up all of your time. So if you can, please tell people about you.
Okay. Where should I start? Well, I've had quite a life. I feel very, very blessed in what I've been able to do, because everything I've done has been what I wanted to do primarily. My background is in architecture, and I have a bachelor's of architecture, a master's of urban regional planning. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I'm a retired major of the Army Reserve. One of the best moments of my life, I think, is when I was 19 years old. I had a chance to go to Africa and work in a maternity clinic with some other students at the time. And that kind of piqued my interest to wanting to be involved in public service, because I've seen how people, when you're helping people, not only do you feel good yourself, but when you see other people, how they respond to your help, that even makes you feel better. So I guess you can say I kind of got addicted to helping people.
That's a good addiction to have.
And so over the years, I've put together several nonprofit, affordable nonprofit housing organizations. One, we started off with zero money. Now we have about $2.3 million in the bank. We have it invested in securities. And one of the things I've enjoyed doing over the course of my career when I was in real estate, I really like helping people become homeowners. I believe more people should move out of being renters and into home ownership. And it is possible, and that's what I would like to, one of the things I would like to do in Baltimore. Baltimore has a 20% poverty rate, and I feel that if we can make more people homeowners, because there's plenty of housing stock there to deal with to do that, I think that would be very helpful to the city, and also it would help the crime rate. Because crime is a manifestation of poverty and poor education. And I think that if we can get people more invested in their community, I think that would also reduce the crime rate. So that's basically my life in a nutshell. I've been a Republican for quite a few years. I like to say I got started when I was 11 years old. I was living in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And Eisenhower was running for re-election, and that's when I had some relatives who were campaigning along the fabled Black Wall Street. They were wives of business people, and they were campaigning for Eisenhower's re-election, and I was helping them carrying the basket of chicken salad sandwiches that they would give to people who gave us 50 cents or a dollar raising money for Eisenhower's re-election, and we gave them not only little chicken, those little small chicken salad sandwiches, sort of, you know, and then we gave him a button that says "I like Ike." So, I've been fortunate to be involved in a lot of things at an early age. So, that's basically it, and I want to kind of carry it on in working in Baltimore because it needs a lot of help.
It does need a lot of help. It truly does. And you've kind of touched on every single topic that I want to talk about tonight. So first of all, so you are a Republican, as you just said, and Republicans these days are getting a really bad rap. And I feel like Republicans are not always the best at telling what a Republican stands for. Why are you Republican, and what does that mean to you?
Okay. I'll tell you the reason why I'm a Republican. And I'm a Republican because when I was quite young, this may be kind of simplistic, but when I was quite young, I used to hear people bash the Republican Party. Oh, they're for the rich. They're for the rich and everything. And I used to say to myself, well, I want to be rich, you know. So people used to complain about the Republicans being rich. I said, well, who wants to be poor? You know, so I said, I want to be rich. So I sort of started studying and watching what people who were Republican and what they did. And back in the day, the iteration of the party was primarily business-oriented, management-oriented. They were the ones who kind of like, even in certain areas, they made sure that the trains ran on time, if you know what I mean. They tended to be serious people. They weren't demonstrative. They were, if you may want to use another term, they were somewhat boring, but they did. But they got the job done, and that's what I liked. And looking at the Democratic Party, while the intentions were great of many people who were Democrats, they kind of, to me, when you look back on it, they kind of breeded a sense of dependency among people. You know, they want to help people, which is great, but they help in such a way that they're going to continue to have to help them because they do not engender being self-sufficient, and I'm the kind of person that I really don't like to have to ask people for help. I tend to be the kind of person that I'd rather just suffer in silence than to go and ask for help sometimes. And I think that the Democratic Party kind of makes people's they kind of help them in such a way that, like I said, they're going to continue to need help. Sometimes there's this thing called tough love that I think is necessary in many instances, and the Democratic Party makes it such that you can't exercise. Well, there's no such thing as tough love because they pretty much provide every need that you have. And then you have some elected officials who promise people things so they can keep getting elected, and as a result, they've created a monster. What we're seeing today in these urban areas, pretty much with the violence and all, it's a manifestation or it's the results of 50, 60 plus years of failed government policy. So
it is, and I'm glad.
That's basically why I'm a Republican. But I'm really an independent. I'm sort of a maverick type because I believe in adhering to policies that solve the problem, not make the problem worse.
I think that is a great thing to run on. You just don't want to make it worse. And right now, I don't know. I mean, Baltimore is in a hard spot. If you got elected to be mayor, the very first thing that you're going to have to deal with, and you and I discussed, is corruption.
Right.
Corruption is rooted so deep in Maryland. Mm. It is tragic, really, because all you're doing, fellow Marylanders who are part of this corruption, you're just selling out your fellow neighbors. I do not understand it. How do you plan on trying to start, or what's your plan to rid this corruption? Because you're going to be fighting the wind.
Yeah. Well, I know it's going to be an uphill battle. I think that the more we talk and the more we show people why continuing on the same course is not helpful, more people will see it. I'm beginning to see the younger people, and I say young, I would say those that are maybe 45 and 50 and under, who have, you know, quite a few years left in their lives to live. I mean, they're kind of seeing all this. You know, the older folks, like in my age and all, you know, some people are just sort of resolved that this is where it's going to be. You know, I can't do anything about it. So, you know, and if they tend to be doing kind of well themselves, they don't see the, they're not living in the pain, so to speak. But a lot of the younger people, you know, I kind of wonder when they get to be 50 and 60 years old, if they live that long, how are they going to manage? Some of them can't even get a job right now, and many of them are not graduating from school, you know, and what they're being, I don't want to use the word taught, but what they're being offered in school is not conducive to their circumstances today, because many young people, what they want is to be able to start making money right away. Even if they're in high school, they want to be able to make a little bit of money. So, you know, I think that we need to come up with a way. We may have to re-examine how early young people can start working. And when I mean working, I don't necessarily mean being the major breadwinner of their family, but in some kind of way helping their family so that they can at least have a little bit of spending change and don't feel like they have to go out and sell drugs or get involved in some violent crime to make a little money. You know, some of these young people, they do things and all they're going to get is maybe $10 or $15 or something, and that's not, I don't think that's worth maybe going to jail for or even going to prison or maybe even losing your life over. So we need to figure out a way how we can engage the young people more, get them involved in things that's going to be useful for them, and that's what I would like to do. Now, what I have noticed over the last 20-some years is that, particularly with government, they tend to have these programs, but the programs feed among itself. You know, they get to be bloated with bureaucracy and a lot of them are duplicate. They're doing duplicate work duplicate efforts, because I don't use the word work, because they're not work, but a lot of them just kind of make busy type things. And the only people that benefit out of it are maybe those that are at the top, who are getting ample, you know, pretty significant salaries, and and those who are providing infrastructure, like the landlords, the buildings, you know what I mean? I mean, the people who are actually supposed to be getting the help, they don't see the help. The only ones that see the help are those who are getting the big salaries and all, you know, so.
I agree with you, and actually this, I want to dive into that. We only have about 2 minutes left until the break, but right on the edge of, there's the corruption, there's the crime, and there's, you know, education and keep getting the youth off of the streets and from terrorizing people on the streets. Your website, actually, I need to tell people, it was really, really, I enjoy it. So people, please reach out there and look at it, because you can go to the issues tab and you can read each plan that you have for education, for crime, and for all of that. And one of the things I find really kind of neat is, for the education, you want to bring back trades into the schools. And I agree with that. I think our children need to learn trades again, because, I mean, just going to college, spending $100,000 to learn sociology that you're going to use at Starbucks isn't going to help very much. But our kids need to learn a trade. But then that's going to be Baltimore City asking for more money in an already broken education system, where they 23 high schools failed to have any student pass any proficiency testing this past year, I was reading. And so if you ask for more money for the corrupt schools, is it going to go to the kids? So how, after the break, I want to ask you more about how are we going to change the education system if we can't fix the corruption, because none of that money and no change is going to happen. So it's like we're on this constant hamster wheel. But with that, again, with my with that's, we're going to go to break real quick. Major Scoggins, just hold on and we'll be right back.
I feel my heart pounding in my chest. I hear the war raging all around me. And somehow I feel like I was born for this. I can taste the fear.
Welcome back, everybody, and thank you for listening to the Veterans Show. If you're in crisis, please dial 988, press option 1, or text 838-255. just remember, you're never alone. There's always somebody out there that wants to hear your voice.
There absolutely is. We're some of them. So we really appreciate it if you reach out and just know that you will get through this. We still have on the line a retired Major Donald Scoggins, who is running to as a Republican candidate to be the mayor of Baltimore City. We were just talking to him about kind of tying it all together, really. We were trying to tie in. Sorry, my puppy is a... trying to get my attention. I'm sorry. But we were trying to tie in about corruption, crime, and education. Because we can try to say we're going to fix education in Baltimore, which is failing miserably. But we can throw more money, but that's not going to do anything because we have to keep the corrupt people from getting their grubby paws all over the money. So, Major Scoggins, how do you suggest we do this?
Well,
and I know that's a tough question. I'm sorry.
Let me mention this to you. Well, number one, you have to be someone who's somewhat of a maverick and someone who has backbone and can speak truth to power. I think one of the, impediments in Baltimore is that over the years, there's so much familiarity with everybody else so that if you take action against one person or one entity, then that's going to be interfere with another. See, Baltimore is part of a political system that is very entrenched, and its tentacles are in every element of the city and the state. Now, to be fair, a lot of the problems that exist in Baltimore, the impediments to making improvements in Baltimore do not rest just in Baltimore. You have this coming from the General Assembly. You have it coming from the state government. And when I say state government, not necessarily the top person's office, the governor, not necessarily there, but you have entities in the state government and in the General Assembly that has authority to do certain things that the local government has to go to. For an example, you cannot come up with your curriculum or certain things you need to get approval on. They have to go through the state. And the state government, they don't work with this kind of dispatch that is necessary. Some of these things, you can't wait for just whatever the General Assembly meets to get these, when they're going to be able to take a vote to get some of these things done. You can't do that, and I think that's part of the problem. And what I would do is I would call people out, you know, because I'm not looking to maybe get elected to what governor or president or anything like that. So I can afford to maybe burn some bridges, but as long as I can get things done, I don't mind about speaking truth to power. And there's too many people in and around Baltimore that influences things because they have the, as they say, he who has the goal makes the rules. So you got a lot of people who have goal and they kind of can pass it all around to people to do certain things that they want to do. But at this stage for me, I'm not going to do that. I'll just call it like it is.
Yeah. And that's what we need.
I think over the years, a lot of people haven't been willing to do that because if you are mid-career or if you're someone who's has to worry about where you're going to get your next job from, then you may just sort of have to grin and bear it, you know.
Yeah. So basically, and that leads to one of my questions is, you've had this amazing career and this amazing life. Like I said, your bio is gigantic. It would take me at least 10 minutes to read on air, but. You could retire and you could go your own way and you could do what you said a lot of people are doing. And what I'm hearing is the older generation going, you know, we don't know what to do, so we don't know how to handle it. So why not just do that? Why risk anything, you know?
I don't have nothing to risk, really.
Okay.
I'm already half, well, I wouldn't say half, but I would just say that I'm at the point in life where I'm really committed towards giving back. And I think that I'm in a position to make some waves that other people can't make, and I can understand that. Like if you're in your if you're mid-career, so to speak, and you got 20-some, maybe 15 or 20 years before you retire, you're going to be concerned about keeping your job, you know. And I can understand that. I really do. But that doesn't mean that things are going to get right, you know. So maybe somebody needs to be there who can provide cover for people who can't do what they want to do because of they'll suffer career reprisals and professional reprisals and everything. I don't have to worry about that because, you know, as they say, I'm already at the end of the road. So,
yeah, well, and I hope more people follow your lead. We need our older generation. We need your wisdom and we need your life lessons. We need them now more than ever as a country. So we need more people to step up in your generation. So I appreciate you being willing to do that for Baltimore.
And one thing I want to say before we get off the air, and that is one thing I would like to do. We talk about the corruption, but I think that another thing that I've noticed, and when I say this, I'm not just picking on Baltimore, but it's just in general within our society in general. I think that we need to give more attention to the youth and provide them with good examples and even come up with a leadership institute type of thing where you can train people how to be good stewards of the public purse, so to speak, you know, and let them know what public service is all about. You know, public service is not to go in and necessarily get rich. You know, everybody wants to make a equitable salary, but it's to go in and provide good. As they say, I always tell people the first objective of government is to do no harm. You don't want government to do harm. It's supposed to do good. Some of the young people haven't had good examples. If you've grown up or if you're very young and you've only worked in government or you've only worked around politicians who are mainly concerned about getting reelected, then you may not... your mindset may not be where it is in terms of solving problems.
I would agree with all of that. I think our youth have been left to flail in the wind and have a screen in front of them to babysit them. And that is the, I'm sorry to be so harsh on that, but it's going to come back and bite us in the butt because when we are older and we're going to need their help, they are going to probably hold a lot against us if we don't get our act together, and that concerns me.
And maybe when we're older, or some of us that are older, that the young people behind us can't help because they're busy trying to help themselves because they haven't prepared themselves. They haven't been prepared, you know.
Oh, exactly. Yes, exactly. They're not going to be trained. They're not going to be ready to take care of us, and so then we're setting ourselves up for failure on every single level. I hope more people, I pray more people rise up to try to stop this. So one of the big issues, let's see. So I would like to talk about this. I read an article about a week or so ago that said 3,500 invaders, illegals, were flown into Baltimore by Biden's administration. And that's just the ones we know about. So you have just Baltimore. Now you guys, Baltimore's already broke, already strapped, and now 3,500 illegals. As we know, there was a video recently released by an invader telling other invaders how they can overcome houses that are vacant in America, how squatters can end up taking over and using our laws against us, which I would think now that we have proof that there's 3,500 people that shouldn't be in Baltimore. Baltimore has a huge problem with empty houses and blight. If these invaders get wind of Maryland laws, you know, and then how would we get them out?
Well, that's going to be quite an issue, and sometimes you really don't know what you can do until the situation comes up and you have to do it. But what I would recommend is that, and it's going to be difficult. What I would recommend, looking at the amount of vacant and blighted properties in Baltimore, I would take it in sections. I would carve out the city in developmental zones. Some in these various zones, an inventory will be taken to see which houses can be fixed up and which cannot be fixed up, or which ones are suitable for being fixed up, because you may have one house that's in habitable or decent shape, or it may even be occupied. But if it's amongst a whole bunch of houses that need to be torn down, then that house that's in relatively okay condition, that house may need to be acquired, maybe through eminent domain or purchasing it from the property owner at a decent price, and then just tearing down the vacant homes that are around it that are contiguous to it. And I think that would be better than just having them sitting there, because I know I've been in the Baltimore, DMV area with Baltimore, Maryland, Virginia for over 50 years, and some of these properties have been vacant ever since then. So there needs to be a organized plan to redevelop these areas that need to be redeveloped.
There really does. But I'm afraid of what's going to happen. I agree with you that we can't really necessarily cross a bridge of, a squatter, then invaders coming in and squatting. But we already know that there's tons of invaders in Baltimore, and so they've got to be weighing on the city's systems and taking hard-earned tax dollars from actual Americans who are needing it. You saw it in New York City, for example, this past holiday season, where the invaders were taking Christmas dinners. So I just don't want to see that anymore. But I'm glad that it's on your radar, so I appreciate that.
Right.
Let's transition. I know a lot of people are wondering about the Francis Scott Key Bridge, and you and I had quite an extensive conversation about this, and we only have about 5 minutes. So Biden came online, and here's my thing with this. Biden came online and said Baltimore won't have to pay. The federal government's going to pay for all of this, which screams alarm bells in my ears, because the federal government is great at money laundering and corruption. And so I worry for Baltimore that while they're sitting here being promised it's going to only take 2 or 3 years, the federal government is going to delay and delay and delay. And because they say they're the ones backing fixing the bridge, they can do whatever they want. So you as a mayor or even Maryland won't have a lot of, room to give. But I also, they say it's not going to be Baltimore paying for it, but that's an utter and complete lie, because if Biden pays for it, if he says that it's on the tax dollars, then isn't Baltimore still paying for it? It's all of us paying
right.
for it.
Well, you're correct in many regards, but I believe what the president indicated was that none of the monies, none of the expense to pay for it will come out of the local government's budget itself. The city of Baltimore would not have to bear the brunt of restoring the bridge, and also any funds that would come from it, if it is coming from the government, not the federal government, but if it's coming from the government, it would be from the state government.
Well, Steve,
government, and any funds that the city government has to expend in terms of dealing with this catastrophe, they would be reimbursed. The city wouldn't have to. So, I mean, I think that was one of the first things that they came up with. And I think Governor Moore and the mayor, Mayor Scott, they're on the same wavelength as to how that's going to be dealt with. Because Baltimore, the city of Baltimore, really has zero money to be able to handle this type of...
Baltimore has zero money, but so does America.
Yeah.
None of us. And the insurance company should be paying this, not American citizens and
right.
not Baltimore. But I fear by the Biden administration just jumping on in that he is actually taking all of Maryland's, gambling chips for this bridge. And I worry that, the simple thing, a lot of people are talking that this bridge will be renamed. Now, if the federal government is paying for it, then the city of Baltimore, the state of Maryland, is not going to be able to push back against saying, no, you won't rename it, if they
right.
would or not.
Well, the renaming of the bridge, I don't think there was some discussion on that, but I don't think it's personally, I don't think it's going to go through. And I tell you that some of these things that are talked about could be either feel-good type activity or feel-good type conversations that could be a distraction towards what we really need to be concentrating on. So I really don't think the renaming of the bridge is going to be an issue. And plus, the main thing is getting the bridge back in operation, or getting it back to where it should be, versus getting sidetracked on something like renaming it and all. I mean, you have some people out there that come up with ideas that may be kind of semi-pie-in-the-sky type things, and it may sound good, or maybe gets people's emotions riled up, but to me, I'm not giving that much thought.
Okay, well, I appreciate you addressing that for me. I want to thank you for your time tonight, Major Scoggins, and I look forward next week. You will be back on the show with us, sure. And then we get to open it up to questions for our audience. Again, thank you for your time, your openness, your honesty, and I can't wait to talk to you next week. For everybody else, may God bless you. Have a beautiful week. Enjoy the day, the rest of the evening. And, you know, as I always say, go out there and do something good, do something wonderful, and we'll talk to you next week. God bless you.